Let's talk tech.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Talk Tech, Season 2, Day in the Life. We really hope you're enjoying. Welcome back to the season, guys. We hope you're enjoying it. I'm loving it. I think it's been really cool. Day in the Life, getting down into the details, into some of these tech roles. We are here today with Episode 6. I'm your co-host, Temi. And I'm joined by my co-host.
Oi, your other co-host. Hi, guys.
Welcome, welcome. And we also have an amazing guest with us. Hello, Lisa.
Hello.
Welcome to Let's Talk Tech.
Thanks for having me.
How do you feel? How does it feel to be here?
It feels momentous.
That's the word I was
iconic.
That's a big word.
Exactly. That's... just giving us what we need, exactly.
Just because I remember when, Temi, you were telling me about sort of the inception of this.
Yeah.
And then the very early days, like, listening to the original episodes, and now here we are. Feels like we've come full circle.
Full circle,
yeah,
right?
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Exactly. Somewhere. We're somewhere. Exactly.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. As you know, in this season, we have our guests on and we talk to them about their life in tech. So we'll be talking to Lisa today about her journey in tech. It's quite, I assume it's an interesting one. Of course, I don't know. So I'm really looking forward to all she has to tell us today. So Lisa, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about you, please.
Sure. So hi, everyone. I'm Lisa. I'm currently a associate at Oliver Wyman, which is a consultancy, and I started my life, I guess, in tech, but now I've ended up in more of a tech adjacent field or sector, if you would. So I did a bachelor's in economics and finance, realized I didn't want to be an investment banker or an accountant. Thought that was horrible. So then I went and did a master's in social science. And I realized that I really enjoyed the people element, but I still didn't really figure out what I wanted to do and what was out there. So I did a short stint at a health tech startup, which is where I started my tech journey, I guess. And I did all bits and bobs, and it was a real startup. There was about 12 of us, so I was doing absolutely everything. And so what all the other people.
Wait. Sorry. You know, we like to break things down. What does everything mean? Give
everything,
us like a little flavor of what we're
I mean, at. I was the coffee person, in addition to the marketing person, in addition to the sales person as well. And it was there where I actually started to learn a bit how to code, but more on that later because I didn't really like that. Anyways, and then after that, I did another short stint at a consultancy, a small consultancy. And it was there where I really discovered what consulting was all about. And it was in more of a tech-focused consultancy role, and I decided I quite enjoyed the varied nature of that. And then I joined a graduate program at Deloitte, which is where I actually met Temi.
Yes.
Cuts out
yes.
of the bag.
The cat is
out. How long ago was that now? That was what?
That was like 4 years ago.
That's
yeah.
4 years ago now, yeah. We're on the Cyber Risk graduate program together. I think we're there for a very similar amount of time, like just over 2.5 years. And then we both skedaddled and moved on. I went to Accenture for a bit where I did workplace related strategy. So again, moving more to tech adjacent rather than tech focused. And
what does workplace strategy mean? Like,
so we were doing a lot of stuff around preparing organizations, particularly because this was at the COVID pandemic, as to move to hybrid working and what their hybrid working strategy would look like. Particularly, we did a lot of work with those industries where it's not so clear cut. So your places like utilities and oil and gas, where they have frontline engineers and in addition to office staff, and what that would actually mean, and a lot of sort of building tech related things as well. So that was quite cool. And now I'm at Oliver Wyman doing people, organization, and performance. So very much removed from the tech side, very much so tech adjacent, but I still encounter tech every so often. But my focus is mainly on the people and the change and the culture side of things now.
Wow, that's really interesting. I think the first thing I'm just very curious about is just like the way you use tech adjacent. And I think that will probably be a replacement for non-technical. Is that right?
Yeah, so I wouldn't classify myself as a technical person. I don't feel like I've ever been that technical either. I've always been more preoccupied with the people side of technology.
Interesting.
I'm laughing because when we worked together at Deloitte and we were both in the cybersecurity team, Lisa would like occasionally just be like, "I don't really like cyber," and I'll be like, "Huh?"
She would be like, "Yeah." We were like moving in opposite directions. Like, I would be like, "I don't really like technical stuff. I don't like cyber." And then Tammy would be like, "I want to be more technical." And we're like, "Oh."
Yeah, it was actually hilarious. And she'd be like, "Yeah, I don't think I want to keep doing this." And I'd be like, "I want to do this, but in a different way." So it was always quite fascinating to see, like, kind of the different pathways that are available and that we went on. And I think, like, we've discussed in previous episodes about the difference between technical and non-technical and how there's like room for every spectrum within technology, right? Like you've raised a really good point that we haven't really touched on so much this season, the people aspect, because wherever you've got technology, you've also got like the people aspect of like getting people ready for the technology and other things that I'm sure you can inform us better about. So yeah, that's really cool. So, question, are you happy? Are you happy in people, in pop, as we like to call it?
It is pop,
or you want to move further away?
Is there a further away? What's further away? No, I am really happy in pop. We call ourselves pop stars. It's a bit lame anyways, but like...
That's clever.
I am happy there because I still have an interaction with tech, but for me it's definitely more about the people and what surrounds them. So yeah, I am happy doing this.
That's good. That's where you want to be, right?
But I don't regret any part of my journey, although it was not, you know, it's obviously been very different and varied to get to this stage. It's not a very standard journey. And I've had a lot of interaction with tech, but I think it's been great. I think it's definitely given me like a unique insight in the role that I am now, and probably an edge, particularly when we do more technology related projects.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's so like technology is so vast, right? There's so much that you can know about, and you actually have a lot of knowledge about a lot of different things because of the path that you've been on. So I think it can only be a positive, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think,
and obviously met great people along the way.
I think that's also like a very important part of technology that is often overlooked, because when we think of technology, we often think of like the bells and whistles and all the, you know, moving parts, but the people part of it is very much crucial to how technology works and how that has been. So in terms of your experience working as a people person, would you say how would you say that has been in terms of just like understanding how to help the people that are working in technology be more, do more and do better?
I think it's been really interesting, and Tammy will tell you that we probably worked in some of the more change-resistant organizations. So it's all very, you know, fun and done, being like, oh, you need to do this tech or you need to implement this tech. But then the hardest part was always the stakeholders, and always getting that adoption bit right, or that, or like landing that piece well with like the future team. Like that was always probably the more difficult part. So I think for me, it's been really useful to be exposed to that from an early stage when we were all in when me and Tammy were doing consulting together. And just some of those fundamental skills, like I still, you know, use to this day and that I've built upon. And I think they're the really important bits.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, like, especially within cybersecurity, there's like a triad idea, right? People, process, technology. And I think we used to focus a lot on the technology aspect and solving the technical problems, like, oh, your network needs a firewall and micro-segmentation and this and that, and let's go in and implement it. And you still found that organizations were having issues and breaches. Why? Because at the end of the day, your technology is only as good as the people using it, right? Or your systems or your security. So now we have a saying that, like, people are your first or last line of defense, whichever way you want to look at it. And it's, if your people don't have the right behaviors, if you don't have the right culture, then all of that technical technology change is for nothing, because it can be undone just like that. So we actually are seeing a lot more emphasis on cyber. Like in my current team, we have an offering called Adaptive Cyber, which is just all around culture and leadership enablement and stuff like that. So yeah, for me in cybersecurity, people is like increasingly more and more important when we look at improving capability. What about you, Oyin? Well, of course.
I'm like, duh.
I asked you that, I'm like, what am I even saying? Yes, you're all about.
Yeah, I'm all about just like the interaction between both of them is like my daily obsession. So I think it's just like super, super important. And I think your journey was very interesting, or is very interesting. So how did you sort of go from this person who was just like learning all the technical things and diverging out of that into somebody who is interested in the people bit? How did that journey sort of happen for you in terms of learning about it?
So I think it's like Tammy said, we were definitely exposed to it, and that people, process, technology, I literally used that in like my last project, even though it wasn't actually tech related. We had basically done a lot of the people and process change, and then we needed to do an assessment or a benchmarking of what was left to do, and a lot of it was obviously the technology. So I think in terms of how I found what I was interested in that journey was just basically trying different things. I think the notion that there is like a perfect job or an ideal role out there is a bit of a misnomer. I think every experience and every role that you have is just about finding the things that you like more about it and the things that you probably don't enjoy as much, and working towards that happy medium each time as you go along. So for me, it was probably the more people facing things, the more people orientated things that I enjoyed on projects, and I pursued those. And they also tended to be the ones that are less technical, a lot of decks upon PowerPoint decks, and taking more of an advisory role. And then moving from Deloitte to Accenture, I kind of focused on that intersection between tech and people, doing something that affects people's everyday life, particularly at the height of the COVID pandemic, in terms of how they return to work and how they actually do their work on a day-to-day basis. And then eventually figuring out from that that I didn't just want to do that intersection, but I wanted to do something that was wholly about the people, and then understanding that and then moving from that and pursuing that in my next role.
So how did you like kind of pivot. So how did you go from, you said health tech startup to consultancy firm to consultancy, well, all consultancy firms since then, but like cyber from like, what was your first consultancy? That was that just like regular strategy?
No, it was, again, still quite tech focused.
Yeah, so like tech consulting, yeah. Went cyber consulting, then you went more like digital consulting, and now mm-hmm. you're like digital people, or would you say it's pure like people, human
capital? I'd say it's more purely people, human now. So I think how, in terms of pivoting, I think you need to look at it more from like a functional skills perspective rather than like an experience perspective. So rather than saying I worked on this project related to cybersecurity, or I worked on this technical project, I think you need to identify more of the functional skills that you gain, which is what I did. So in terms of stakeholder management, general project management, any methodologies that you can apply across the spectrum that weren't specific to an industry or a piece of work. So things like change methodologies or agile, things that were very, you know, functional in terms of a skill set that you had that you could pursue and apply to those different areas. And then I think there is a way of highlighting those aspects in your projects. Like, you might not see it, but if you really sit down and think about it, if there is an element that you want to highlight and pursue further, you can definitely highlight those and talk about those in more detail when you're pursuing a role that is, you know, a bit more adjacent to what you've done previously. And I think that's how I've done it so far.
So that's like in your CV and interviews, like practically, yeah, yeah. Just pulling out all
exactly.
those. So skills focus as opposed to just like experience focus. Yeah. Okay, that's a good shout for sure.
Yeah. So does this mean that you can then use the same skills that you've learned in a non-tech context?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think what's really good about consulting is they're not looking for you to sort of be a pro in certain things. They're looking whether you can be able to do and execute things in certain ways. And I think that is basically demonstrating that you have that skill set of doing things in certain ways or be able to do things. And that isn't necessarily unique to working in this industry or that industry.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think even in the more technical, you guys can't see me, I did the air quotes. Even in the more technical roles, you do have to have a lot of the non-technical skills in terms of like stakeholder management, like you mentioned. Unfortunately, PowerPoint presentations, narrative, building a narrative, being able to tell a story. So yeah, you're right. It's just about, I guess it's about presenting the side that you're most interested in developing or the role exactly. that you're pursuing. Yeah, okay. Awesome. That's good insight. I think those are some good tips for anyone who's kind of looking to pivot within a sector.
Yeah, and I think that takes us nicely to the next thing I was sort of wondering about is what a typical day looks like for you. Yeah, what your role involves, what you would usually do on a regular day.
So what do pop stars get up to?
I mean, it depends. It's probably not too dissimilar from your day, Temi, or even yours, Oya, to be honest. I don't know. Like, so in consulting, you work on project-based work. It depends if you are on a project or not. So what I've noticed is that moving from bigger consultancies where I've been in the past to where I am now, there's a lot less people. Teams typically are quite lean. They are typically shorter projects as well. They're a bit more strategic, and therefore, because we are obviously more expensive, they tend to be shorter. So typically 8 to 12 weeks is about the average length of a project that I find myself on. So they're quite intense, sort of these short bursts. And what will usually happen is a project will get kicked off, and then we'll outline what we'll have to do for that project, what we have to deliver. And depending on your role within the project team, you might be leading or you might be executing, and that will dictate your day-to-day tasks, whether that's doing the development of content or doing analysis, or whether you're the one fronting client meetings and interactions or getting interviews set up and things like that. So it can really vary. And then when you're not staffed on a project, you will typically be doing things to either sell more projects, so business development, or you'll be doing things to drive sort of your practice, whether it be doing events or going out to universities, or just doing some pro bono consulting work with some charities that you might have a relationship with already with the firm. So really, it varies. And then some days you'll just be doing expenses all day because you've let them pile up forever and just doing consulting admin, which Tammy can probably tell you all about as well.
Timesheets.
Oh,
expense.
Tammy, tell them how bad I was in my timesheet. I was such a menace. You know that I only have to do them like once a month now. I was
really
happy. Yeah, I was like, wow, this is amazing.
I'll tell you what you love. At my new place, they pre-populate the timesheet for you.
Yeah, so they bring it in from your spot, basically
from
your
staffing.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, mine do that too. I was like, wow, this
you must
is
be
like,
so happy.
I'm so happy. I can press a button and it imports it. I'm like, great. Yeah.
Admin can take a while. Like, I used to I try and stay on top of it every week in advance if possible. Do you know the worst thing about what Lisa just said? We were on a long-term engagement. We knew what we were gonna be working on. For the entire year, and she still didn't do
it. No, because I wanted it weekly. That's so unreasonable.
that sounds like
it
a lot. To
be amazed.
That's a loss for anybody.
Don't support her, because literally you could create like a template, which is what I did. Just create a template, because you're in the same. Okay, you move teams a bit more than I did, to be fair, but you're in the same team. It's the same code. You just put like 88888 and you're done. And you can copy and paste that.
No, it was burdensome.
No, to be honest,
let me tell you, burdensome.
Timesheets are
probably the worst part of your job, yeah? Or the least preferred part of your job.
Oh, yeah, all the like admin that comes with it, for sure.
No, not for me. I don't mind it. The worst part of my job is like, consulting just goes up and down. So there's times where you're like so busy, and I love that. I love being very busy, like stimulated, like yeah, let's do this. And then there's times where it's just dead. Like, I hate that. So
I don't mind that.
I don't like the cyclic nature of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I'm experiencing it more now. Like, previously I've just always been super busy. Mm-hmm. Since I joined BCG, I've been less busy, and I hate it. Like, I hate the downtime, because it's just like,
just you wait.
Yeah, this is what everyone's telling me. Oh, enjoy it.
Yeah, I feel like the cyclical nature means you get some downtime, you know, in and amongst the like bursts of crazy times that you have. But you know,
that's what I have annual leave for.
No, that's like focus time though.
But yeah, I think the cyclical nature is my least favorite part of consulting, to be honest.
There are times where it's not so cyclical though, where it'll just be like constant.
Yeah, I think up to now in my career it's been constant.
Yeah,
I also don't like, because it's consulting and at the end of the day the business needs to make money, there are some projects that are just so dead, but you have to do it.
Why did we sell this?
But
I think that's also really interesting as well, because you get to work on different projects, which I think mm-hmm. is great. So
mm-hmm. that is true.
Lisa, you mentioned some things within or what you do within your day, and it sounds like from my list, correct me if I missed anything. You do business development, event planning, content development, research, accounting and admin, which you all know you hate, client success and client services. Did I miss anything?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
You're a busy woman.
Content and like analysis. Well, honestly, though, like 90% PowerPoint, right? Right, Tammy?
Well, not so much anymore. Now I can just send it to Global Productions.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That also blew me away.
That was amazing, man.
That was like, amazing. So, I think I was telling you about this. I was like,
you told me,
like, where has my value add gone?
you prepared me for it because I think I would have been shook. But yeah, sorry. Back to non-PowerPoint related things. But yeah, I think that's pretty accurate in terms of consulting. Like, you just got a bunch of stuff that you're trying to do through the day in and around your project work.
And I'm curious, is that different for non-consultancy context? Like, if you're working maybe within a specific startup, is it going to be the same? Or would you just focus on, say, just like the business development or just like the content or something like that? Mm-hmm.
So I think, to be honest, at least in my friendship circle and for people that work in non-consulting roles, I think a lot of businesses are actually turning more towards the project-based model. So mm-hmm. even though they are like, I don't know, like a bank or something, they still have, you know, their whole business. Obviously, they have the business as usual, like the operational side of things, but a lot of them will constantly be having transformation projects or change projects in place to better or to improve the business or to change or implement something new. And, you know, I do have friends that even though they don't work in a consultancy environment like I do, which is externally facing to other clients, for all intents and purposes, they're still on project-based work within their own company. I don't know, I have this friend who's been on a project for about a year though, so I guess the context is different because, you know, when it's for your own company and they're funding it all the time and they're on their own timelines and there are other dependencies, it's obviously different in that context. But I still see, you know, my friends who don't work in consultancy working on projects within their own organization as well. So I think in some ways it's different, but I think also in a lot of ways with the businesses and towards what sort of model they're moving towards, it's also very similar.
I can absolutely relate with that. So I work with a startup and we have an agile way of working. So we work in sprints.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And of course, so that's kind of like that project-based model where we're just like focusing on like different parts of the products that we're building or just like different questions that we're trying to find answers to. Sometimes that'll be like 2 weeks, other times it could be just like focusing on something for more than a sprint. But yeah, I can definitely relate with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's your most productive time of the day? Are you a early morning go-getter?
Oh, no. I wish I could be like those girls. You know, like that girl aesthetic on like Instagram and TikTok where they like wake up at 5 a.m., have like a green juice, go for
workout,
have like a hot girl walk or whatever. And I'm just like, no, that is not me. Like, I do try and wake up a bit earlier each day, but I don't think I'll ever reach like 5 a.m., 6 a.m., that girl aesthetic status. So it's not for me. I think I'm most productive sort of in the middle of the day, in the early afternoon. But honestly, I think it really depends because of how cold it is right now. Ain't nobody being productive in like the early hours of the morning when it's still dark, and like ain't nobody being productive past 4 p.m. when it's also really dark. So yeah, I think probably in the middle of the day. What about you guys?
Oyin, you kind of said last episode, right?
Yeah, we had something similar, and yeah, I told them I'm a night owl and they made me look like I'm some kind of alien.
You should work with US-based people then.
This is the conclusion we came to.
Because they like start their day at what, like 1 p.m. our time, right? That's great. Then you can just keep on working through the night.
Like, that would be so ideal. Like, when you said your most productive time is the midday, I was like, no, how? Midday, you know, like there's something called like a midday slump. Yeah, where you're just like really productive in the morning, and when it gets to the midday, it's like it's very like you've eaten your lunch and you're just like chill. I just want to just end the day at that
point. I feel that. But I think the weather the way it is, it's like, oh, these are the only 4 hours of sunlight I'm getting.
liked it when the sun, like whenever the sun has gone down when I was in the UK, and when it's like
I come alive in the night.
That's what I've learned about her the past.
I know people
episodes.
Like you, Oyen. Yeah, for sure. You're like those people at the university, like libraries, that turns up at like 8 p.m. Like, I'm here to start my day.
My day just started.
So for me, it's like I prefer the time when I have most pressure, to be honest. Like, if I have not a lot to do, I'm not going to be productive in the morning. I'm just going to be honest. Like, I'm going to faff about, and then I'll work in the like mid afternoon, early evening. If I have a lot to do, I'll be productive in the morning. So it depends. I think when I'm in my normal cadence of like project work, I'm probably quite productive in the morning, I think. Not 9, maybe like 10, between 10 and 12, and then like 1 and 3, and then mid-afternoon slump. Then I have like one last hour of like productivity, and then I'm gone because I aim to leave by like 5 or 6. So, it depends how much work I've got on and how much pressure I feel. The more pressure I feel, the more productive I'll be. If there's no pressure, I'm gonna have the least productive day ever. That's just me.
Yeah, I feel that. I work really well under pressure.
I was thinking about this the other day, like, is that healthy? Because like when there's no pressure, I'm just there chilling. Like, I could have work, but there's no pressure. I'm just like,
yeah. So I don't think I'm quite as bad as you guys, because like I always have this notion of thinking about future Lisa. So
I don't think about future Sammy.
Exactly. So like when I'm, you know, not very motivated and I'm just faffing about, like you say, I'll be like, oh, but future Lisa's gonna have to pick up the slack. And then I'll be like, I can't let her do that. Present Lisa has to actually, you know, work.
I'm so bad with that because I think, oh, future Temi can handle that. Future Temi in my head is just like the most capable person.
Always speaks up the slack.
She hasn't let me down yet, so you know.
No, but the thing is, whenever it gets to that last minute and it's like I can't, and it's just like the pressure is so much, and it's like, why didn't I start this earlier? I usually have like this existential crisis. I'm like, I should,
past,
you know,
audience, girl.
Time, no, why did you do this to me? Yeah. But then the result turns out awesome, and I'm like, okay.
Maybe so you don't learn from it.
This is why I think I have a problem, because I don't think that. I don't think, why didn't I start earlier? I just get in the zone. I get like hyper focused and I'm like, it's gotta be done. It's do or die right now. And
you're just at that point, like, well, it is what it is.
Yeah, like, I love it.
Temi, you know, what?
Yeah.
She did whatever she wants to do and now we're in this situation.
But I do.
It's getting to the point where I now feel like I can't work without pressure. It's really bad. Like, if there's no impending sense of, will I get it done? Will I not? I'm just like, this is boring.
What's the point? She's like,
What's the point of showing up?
Yeah, but I do like what you said, Lisa, about thinking of like future Oye and what.
You've got to look out for yourself.
Yeah, I should.
That's a good tip for sure. That's a good
tip. That's the people part of our job coming through. So yeah,
exactly.
So in terms of just like your work, and if someone was interested in doing what you do and they're like, yeah, this is great, I would like to do the people part of tech or of any job, what kind of path or what kind of resources would you recommend to them?
Hit me up on LinkedIn.
She's like, I don't offer free consultancy services.
No, I mean, what would I? So I did quite a lot of I say quite a lot. I did a few courses, on edX and Coursera, that were more again aligned to what I wanted to pursue. So I think those are quite good resources. They have a lot of different ones on, well, basically anything, but for me in particular, I did some on organizational design, and on change. So yeah, I think those really helped as well. And then I think just connecting with people, hello, that work in said space or that have maybe done similar transitions in their career, I think is really useful as well. So LinkedIn, I definitely think is a really good tool to do that. Yeah. And I get a lot of people reaching out on LinkedIn, not necessarily to do with like pivoting, but just that they're interested and they want to know more. So that's always a good resource as well when it's not being used as the new social media, which I find that sometimes it is these days. But,
when you're not updating about the amazing thing that you did for humanity that day.
Exactly.
that's do you know what? Like, I've seen Lisa do this in action. She's an EDX and Coursera like champion. Like, I remember when you wanted to do DevOps and you did like a bunch of courses on DevOps as well. Like,
yeah.
So she's definitely about that, like knowledge up. Get some certs, get some understanding, and like
for
go
sure.
for it. I think it's a really good model. And you're right, like there's so many tools and like platforms out there. You mentioned a couple, LinkedIn, another one. It's like, it's, you can get all those skills, get all that knowledge that you need, right? If you want to pivot, if you want to start somewhere, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really nice, like the age that we live in, because I think, I can't think of any other time in history where it was so, I don't want to use the word easy, but feasible to like literally start a new career path or change your career path slightly, just because there's so many resources available to us and it's like a relatively low barrier of entry. Like there's a lot of free courses and like from really prestigious institutions that you can do, and that's pretty cool.
Agreed. And I think for me in particular, like I was very lucky to still, you know, start in consulting and still be in consulting, but just of a different nature, because I feel that in consulting you ultimately have like a core consulting skill set which you gain from doing any sort of consulting, and they're just really basic stuff. Like Temi's already mentioned a few of them, like being able to craft a story and a narrative, being able to sort of manage project and project elements, and then being able to interact with your stakeholders, etc., and do certain types of analysis. Like they're just very fundamental things, which I think that because I still started out in a consulting environment and I learned early on, that they really helped, even though I wanted to eventually go and do consulting in a slightly different area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you're now in POP, but you've had like a journey to get there. What learning path, just like off the back of like resources, would you recommend if someone wanted to become a POP star specifically?
POP star specifically, there's quite a few books, to be honest. Like I have not read them all. But I know that the partner in my practice is really big into like Daniel Kahneman. So behavioral science, behavioral economics, things to do with people and decision making. there's a lot of stuff that he would recommend to read up on that. We, Tammy, you're going to laugh so much, but do you remember, you know, the driver integrator and thing? So we
business chemistry.
Yeah, business chemistry that we had at Deloitte. So when I went to Accenture, we used like Gallup strengths.
Yeah.
And now, like, I have something completely different again. It's like, but it's the same colors, like yellow.
Oh,
red,
the yellow, green.
I think it's
blue.
Called like DISA or something. And yeah, like it's basically like Jungian psychology. And we actually do a lot of that sort of stuff with clients as well. So
look at you. So, okay. Background for those who aren't aware, which is like none of you. I personally, and Lisa used to take the mick out of these like business chemistry psychological profile things, because it would come up with this like label for you, right? You're a driver, mm-hmm. you're an integrator, you're this, you're that. And mm-hmm. we just thought it was ridiculous. So it's so funny to me now that Lisa is now an arbiter of these kind of
things. I have not personally worked on one of these projects, but I could.
It's coming.
I've seen them, and I mean, I'm still not, you know.
I was going to say, have you been converted?
No, I'm still not the fondest, because like, for all those reasons that you've just outlined. But yeah.
What used to crack me up was how like strongly some people would hold on to these. It would be like,
yeah,
I can't,
like the horoscope.
I can't help being X because I'm a driver. I'm sorry, like, yeah. I'm sorry I just spoke to you like
yeah,
that.
So we had a session basically where like they made it very clear that they were like, you like can't just use it as a scapegoat for being like rude. Yeah, like rude and like a rude and intolerable person. You can't just
I'm
be
a
like,
driver. I'm 100% driver, sorry.
Oh my goodness. My CEO absolutely hates these things. Like that's like her pet peeve. These like it's just like very strongly not based in evidence. And like you said,
exactly.
It's also like a way for people to just give excuses for some of their bad traits or something. Just like, yeah, I can't do this because this is who I am. And that doesn't help, even from like a behavior change perspective. If you tell people that this is who you are, there's a lot of likelihood that they will not want to change, because
it's just like affirming
their
beliefs,
right? Exactly. So I think at a surface level it's good to maybe get like an initial understanding of like why you do things a certain way or like why you act a certain way, but I think ultimately what at least the work that we do where we try to work on in like behavior change is more about mindset and cultures and cognitive biases that we might have. And then, you know, we try and make people gain skills in other areas to try and combat those. So I still think it's very much surface level. I'm not
It's cute. It's cute.
I prefer that approach you just described, because I think then it's not like, this is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Go away. It's like, this is who you present to be. And again, I think we had this conversation, Lisa, when I used to bash it. It was like, how well do you actually know yourself? Because I think it relies so much on a high level of self-awareness, because the questions are answered by you. So it says, do you think you tolerate people? Like, this is just a random example. And then the person might say yes, but they may be the most intolerable person in the world who is just deluded, as many of us are. So for me, it's an inherent flaw.
Exactly.
Because it requires that you know yourself and you're going to be honest.
It's like the ultimate bias, yourself.
So I always found that quite interesting. So I prefer that approach where it's more like, this is how you present, or this is how you think about yourself. And then it's like, helping them like maybe build up other skill sets or other behaviors or perspectives. I like that. I think that's a better way
and,
to approach it.
Yeah, and this is actually like a very core part of what we do at my organization, in terms of just like helping people think outside of who they think they are. So what you said about just like how we perceive ourselves, because we're very bad judges of ourselves, right?
Oh yeah.
So we like to think of just like, what are the observable behaviors that other people can see and give you feedback on? And do that in such a non-subjective way, so in an objective way that people can tell you, people who have actually seen those things that you've done, that can give you that kind of feedback. And then with that, you can actually grow. So just like having more of like a growth mindset. So it's not like, yeah, this is who I think I am, this is who I, you know, think I present to people. That's not how it is in reality. So yeah, that's really interesting.
I love that. Bring the receipts. Show me the receipts. And also, growth mindset is such a tech term. Like, everywhere I go, I hear growth mindset.
Like, I don't think it's a tech term. I've like had a growth mindset lecture at like pretty much every place I've been at now. And I think, you know, it was, I used to bash it as well. I used to be like, what the hell is this growth mindset?
I didn't mind growth mindset so much. I didn't mind that one so much. I don't think, oh yeah, you weren't the biggest fan of it.
But I think like more recently, I've finally come to see what that actually means in practice. And I'm like, oh, okay.
All right. It's interesting. Yeah. Like some of these things, it's like, you kind of have to evolve into, I don't think I'll ever evolve into business chemistry, but yeah.
It's fine, we've left that behind.
And I'm curious, so if someone else who is in coming from a consultancy background is trying to get a job in your field, what kind of job descriptions, or sorry, what kind of job roles should they be looking out for? What are kind of like the common, because I know it's called different things in different organizations. So what kind of job titles should they be looking out for?
I think most of them will be like senior consultant or associate. I think me and Tammy at our current firms, our titles are inversed. Well, correct for wrong, Tammy, but yours goes like associate, senior consultant, and then is it project lead
or principal?
Yeah, project lead, principal. At mine, it goes consultant, senior consultant, associate, and then engagement manager.
Oh.
So it's reverse. So honestly,
trying to be different.
I just feel like they just call them whatever they want at this point. There's no like standard thing. In consulting firms, you also have like specialist roles as well. So what I find is that consulting firms are focusing a lot more in their verticals sometimes. And whilst the majority of people will be like a consultant, I'm using air quotes, you'll also have people that will be a bit more specialized. So we have like a dedicated analytics team, for example. So they will work on projects with the likes of myself, but they'll be the ones that are doing the heavy lifting when we have to run like reams of data from like an employee engagement survey or something. And they'll be the ones going through and getting all the results, which, you know, will then tie up in a narrative and present to people. So those people might be called different things. But for the most part, I think it's just consultant, associate, whatever.
But then did you apply to a general track, or you applied specifically to like people?
So I applied specifically for POP, because what happens, and I don't know if it's the same for you, Temi, but in Oliver Wyman at OW, you start off as a generalist for, I don't know, like 2 or something-ish years. So for like for the entry level grade, which in my firm is called
consultant. Yeah.
And then senior consultant, for those 2 name grades, you are a generalist. You do everything.
It's the same.
And then you move up. Once you move it to the one above, which in your case would be consultant, and in my case it's associate, you then start aligning to
either a
practice or an industry.
Industry.
So I joined with people that at my level, on like the same day, there was like a handful of us. A lot of them came in from industry. So they were like ex-chemical engineers. One guy was ex-Boeing. So they obviously naturally aligned to an industry, which we would call a vertical, but I aligned to a capability, which is a horizontal, which sits across it. But I think as you go further up, you actually need to have 2 alignments. You need to have both a capability and an industry, because that's where your subject knowledge will then, you know, come from. And then that's kind of what your niche or your area will be.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly the same.
It's just called different things.
Yeah, just different job titles, but it's the same premise. When you come into the core consulting track, it's exactly what you said. There are different tracks where it's slightly different, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, because I've actually not seen any roles or any job titles under just like consultant or associate for startups or just like other tech companies. Is there an alternate job title?
I guess it really depends on where you're applying to, because if you're going into a consulting firm, then I feel for the most part you know that you'll be doing a consulting role.
Yeah.
For like internal consulting roles, I think it's a bit more nuanced. So a lot of my friends will either be project managers or product managers, and they'll do like consulting based work because, again, it's project based and they're consulting internally with internal stakeholders, but they just won't necessarily be called the same things that me and Temi are, for example.
I think for like startups, or if we take like a tech company, I think they would tend to just be like in the people organization, or like I think it would either be people or human capital,
some sort of HR
or less HR. HR is a different function. It would be people or human capital. People operations, human capital, and then some sort of role within that team. I think in other industries, not consulting, it would tend to be team oriented. So that would be the team that you would be looking for. I think.
Because I think there's a lot of variation in terms of just like the title and also I guess the scope of it. But yeah, that's really useful. Thank you.
So, what is the progression pathway look like? You just gave us a little. Well, I think you kind of gave us it there, right? For you. Is that the top level? So you said engagement manager.
So
do you mind
going
through it again, please?
So you come in at entry level and you start your life off as a consultant, which is the opposite to you. You go consultant, senior consultant, and then you get to associate, which is my level, and then the level above that we call engagement manager. And then after engagement manager, we have principal, and then partner. But obviously within these grades, there's a bunch of different sub-levels. And you would ideally progress through them, so you reach like the highest sub level of your current grade to get to like the next name grade, and that's what the progression pathway typically looks like. And you typically spend a bit longer as you go up at each grade, in terms of, you know, as you get more senior. I think the most rapid progression happens at the start. But I would say probably be careful, because I think that's also the bit where you can burn out the most easily too, because you're chasing that year-on-year progression. But yeah, that's the pathway.
So partner is like the highest level.
Yeah, the big dogs.
is that what you're aiming for?
I don't know if personally I want to be part.
Don't worry.
Why are you laughing, Tammy?
I don't think you're planning to spend the rest of your career in consulting, so I don't think partner is your aim.
Yeah. So I don't know. So consulting is doing it for me right now, but I just feel that once. I don't know, it feels quite anticlimactic. Like, once you get partnered, then what? Like, are you just on, you know, do you just sell projects forevermore?
I think it's kind of up to you. I haven't actually thought about this, but I think it can kind of look however you want it to look, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. To some degree. So I think my issue previously was I couldn't really see, like, I didn't feel like I had good role models in those positions, or reflective role models, I should rather say, in those positions.
Do you know what? I think that actually has an impact on us. So
I think it does, yeah.
For context for the listeners, when we were at Deloitte, for example, in the cyber practice, there was no female partner. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that does something to you psychologically. consciously or otherwise. Like, I never saw myself staying at Deloitte beyond a certain number of years for various reasons. But I think that plays into it. And even where I am now, yes, there's more women in like partnership positions, but like as a Black woman, for example, I don't see a lot of people who look like me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what this has to do with long-termism, but I find I don't really think about like, oh, I'm going to be here for 20 years or 30 years or whatever. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I think that's a good point that you make in terms of...
I'm sure it does.
I don't see someone and think, oh, I want to be her, because there is no one who looks like
me. Yeah. Yeah. Or you can be that her for other people.
Though. I could be that her, but I'm just like, I don't know. The thing is, I don't know, to be honest. What do you think, Lisa? Like,
yeah,
you were saying about the role model thing.
Yeah, so I think... most recently at my current company, I think that's the only place where I've seen reflective role models in said positions. So up until basically I came to OW, all of like my mentors or like coaches that they assign you to have always been men. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like they were
nothing wrong with men.
There's nothing wrong with that. They're all nice. But it's
to
just
be
that,
clear.
Yeah. Just a caveat and put that out there. But it's just it's like difficult to find, you know, when you're talking about things as nuanced as career and progression, it's difficult to have or to draw semblances of shared experiences when obviously your experiences are going to be extremely different. So I think I am very lucky where I am now, where my current coach / career advisor, she literally made it, yes, it's a she, so it's a woman, it's the first woman I've had, first of all. And she made it to partner this year, and she's quite young as well. And she's the first female partner in my practice as well. So I think,
kudos,
yeah, I know, exactly. There's a lot of movement in that space now, and I've also met another woman partner from a different industry as well, and she's also not white, and she even said herself, like, you know, there's not a lot of us, so it was really nice to be able to speak to her and again be able to have conversations about some semblance of shared experiences and be able to have someone to look up to in that way as well. So I think that does play into it a lot in terms of being able to see myself, you know, and how long I see myself doing this for. But right now, to be honest, I don't know is the real answer. I don't know. Because I've also seen people who have gotten to a certain point and then exited and done something that they've really enjoyed. So again, I think it'll just really depend on at which point it feels that I'm ready for something new.
What about you, Owen? What were your aspirations? Where do you see your career going?
You want to be on a yacht, don't you, Owen?
Yes.
The yacht life.
Absolutely.
We all want to be on a yacht.
Are you still asking? Of course.
Shaking our ass. Yeah. In a thong.
Timmy, you do not.
I'll pay money to see you do that, Timmy. When are you going to do this?
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, so I think that's a very interesting question. But most likely I would exit and do my own thing at some point. I've always wanted to do that, build something, you know, something that helps people, something that is valuable to people. Yeah, just build. I think that's the word. But I haven't, it's not, I don't have like a 10-year step, you know, go well thought out and all of that, but it will most likely be in that direction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, by God's grace.
See, that's like really interesting, because I feel like me and Temi used to have these conversations where it would like, it's like, oh, I
you
to
used
this.
To have a five-year plan.
Yeah, so I like, so I
yeah, she looks like someone who
be like, well, oh, Lisa, God, I want to do XYZ and I want to do this, and then like every so often I'll be like, I just want to go plant vegetables in China. Cool. And I'll be like, no, I want to become like,
that's so peaceful,
a corporate high flyer. And then
don't
like,
forget,
oh,
you want to do your MBA, man. That was on the list.
Oh, you know what?
Wow.
It's very tempting, because they have
They'll sponsor you, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But only, but I don't know if it's as good as BCG, because like some of my friends at McKinsey were saying that they can do an MBA at pretty much any MBA school and they'll get sponsored. But at OW, they're like, it must be like basically the top 20 in the world. So I'm like, oh, it's like,
Yeah. I mean, I think you're gonna. I think you're gonna do it because it was on your list. So I'm watching this.
But as I get older, I'm just like, what's the point?
Do it.
That's cool. I mean, so you want to build something? I have no doubt that you will. To be honest, I think you're definitely going that way.
Do you see it as something tangible, Oyin, or like something more digital?
I think both, actually, to be fair, because there's a lot to me beyond tech, so probably. But when I was saying that, it was mostly thinking of tech, something digital, because I very much just like to think a lot about just like how can technology solve people's problems, how can we use technology to make people's lives better. So yeah, it's inevitable that at some point that would become cool. Something. Yeah.
We will watch the space.
Watch the space, guys.
Hopefully, if it's like a product, we can get like lifetime subscription service or something. Yeah.
Yeah, if you pay good money. Yeah, because
Nate's rates.
Oh well, look, we just got deep here. Before we get too deep, we are at the point of the show that the people tune in for.
Bust out the theme music.
Bust out the theme music. Show me the money.
Show me the money.
So
we need an official theme song, actually.
So let's talk tech. We like to like be real and get to the real. Like what does it actually mean to be in technology? What does it actually mean to be a pop star? And one of the things we've been asking everyone who's come on the show this season is, can you give us a range, if you must? Can you give us an idea of the salary for the roles you've done so far? And like the career progression that you mentioned at your current place? And we do this not just like, oh my God, I'm Lisa and I'm a baller, but but so that people can have realistic expectations. I'm sure you're aware, you know, like when people hear that you're working in tech or tech adjacent, as you so nicely put it, they just think everyone is earning X amount. And as soon as you get in, you'll earn X amount. So we're just really trying to ground people and say, listen, this is the reality. This is what it can look like. So yeah, I'll give you the floor.
I mean, it's obviously different across like different firms and industries. So when I first started, I was on around like 25K. And then moving to like slightly bigger companies, it'd be like close to about 30K. And then my biggest jump probably came when I moved to Accenture. I was on about 55 to 60. And these are not like including anything else. And then now moving to what would be deemed as more of a strategy consulting firm and role, it's now on like 80 to 100. But obviously, like, I have gained experience during that whole time.
$80 to $100, pounds.
Thousands. I work in GBP.
Wow.
So
we got a baller.
I mean Tammy is also in the same
Tammy.
We're asking the questions here. I'm not in the hot seat.
This is not about me.
I feel like what is quite good when like in like the company that I'm currently at, and I think a lot of like other big ones, they share like the compensation grid quite openly with their employees, and that's why you'll find quite a lot of Glassdoor information for these bigger companies as well.
Very accurate.
So yeah, exactly. And I think what is also something that is known when you move to a strategy consulting firm or house is that you're like base salaries will be very, you know, like stepped and progressive, and they won't, and there won't be a lot of leeway in them. But what will be changed is whether you get like a signing bonus and obviously your performance bonus, which is given at the end of year as well. Like those will be the differentiators in terms of what you can probably negotiate and what you can expect to be a bit different. But in terms of base salaries, I think that's something that is like shared and is openly discussed, and when there are compensation changes, they do tend to be like firm-wide as well.
So question, did you negotiate a signing bonus? How did you do that? Because I think that would actually be cool for people to hear about. And then secondly, could you share what the bands are for the different levels that you mentioned previously, like consultant, senior consultant, blah blah blah?
So I negotiated a sign-on bonus because of like when they wanted me to start, so I would be affect. So I think how it worked out for me was that I would be giving up my performance bonus at Accenture when I was leaving, because they wanted me to start slightly earlier at OW, so I would have to basically like resign before I got paid out that. So that was a key in it as well. And I think also, you know, just I think just being upfront about these are my expectations and saying that, trying to be honest and say if you do have things as well that you're interviewing with, to obviously leverage those positions as well. I think you need to make yourself.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because like Lisa is a master at like, you need to drop some tips as to how you approach interviewing and like pay negotiations, please, because this woman is on another level when
so
it
you
comes
need
to
okay
that.
So you obviously need to consider like the opportunity cost of things that you're giving up. You obviously need to take into account inflation. You also need to take into account like, you also need to try and portray yourself as a hot commodity, right? That you are also desired by other
places.
I got
options!
Exactly, that you have options, and that hopefully you're not just putting all your eggs into this one basket. I tread carefully because they're, like, this has always worked for me personally, and I think those are, you know, key concepts that I feel that most people would have in their back pocket if they're trying to negotiate for themselves. But I have a friend once who basically went through like a very, very long-winded interview process, and he tried to negotiate slightly higher than they were offering, and they were like, nah, I'm rescinded the offer. It's like, yeah. So, I mean, like, I feel like that was a very unique situation, and we found out later that basically they went on a hiring freeze. And they didn't really know how to like how to basically like tell him that. So when he tried to negotiate like something so small, they were like using it as the excuse to listen to his offer. Anyways,
that is so sad.
Yeah, that's really sad. So I don't think that's what happens in most situations. So I would still abide by the fact that you need to try and portray yourself as having options, and that you've done your research and you know what the market value is. And in these firms where they do have the pay data that's quite reliable and like shared both internally and externally, just to basically use that to your advantage as well.
Nice tips,
really.
Thank you.
Useful. Can you share your LinkedIn, because I know you mentioned earlier that people could reach out to you?
Yeah,
LinkedIn premium over here.
Yeah.
I will. I'll just email it after.
Okay, yeah, we'll share it. We'll
I mean
share
I have it, so it's
yeah, I was like
Yeah,
I'll share that with you. So in terms of your job and your role, what would you say is the biggest misconception that people have about it that you would like to address? You know, we just like to let people get things off their chest on the show. So is there anything you would like to
That the traveling address? Is glamorous. That it's like, well,
it's
that it's like that it's glamorous full stop, basically. So I mean, like, sometimes it is. I have to say that we, you know, like, we have really nice parties. I feel like the firm really makes an effort to try and make us socialize and bond. But then I also feel that, you know, there is a side, especially when it comes to traveling for work, it's like very exhausting, because you're literally potentially put onto a plane, and then as soon as you get off, you have to work or meet clients, and then it's basically you don't see outside, you don't really have time most of the time anyway to like, oh, I'm gonna go for a walk and see the sights. It's very work or like orientated, and then it's exhausting having to like fly back, and sometimes you miss out on weekends where you do want to see your friends and stuff, because sometimes your weekends will be used for traveling and then you're just back at work again. So I'm not saying it's like the worst thing in the world, but I do feel like especially on TikTok and stuff, I see people glamorizing it, and I just want to keep it real and be like, we also have to work really hard as well.
To be fair, people glamorize a lot of things on TikTok.
Right.
I think someone has gotten in trouble for doing that. It's like a day in my life. I think it was a Twitter employee, and she was just showing herself getting, like, you know, free food, going to a lounge and just chilling. And everyone was like, whoa, do you actually work? And I'm sure she does, but the way the video was presented made it look like she was just chilling at work.
Did she do that with Elon at the wheel? Because I'm sure he will find that as good reason to fire her.
Yeah, I think she did that pre-Elon. And okay, then Elon was just like,
and now she's not there anymore.
I don't think she is. I'm not sure, but they laid off everybody. So I'm sure that would be Yeah, there's a lot of glamorizing.
That's a good bugbear to air, actually. Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't actually traveled that much as a consultant. Like, when we worked together, it was just the next town, so I used to get the train. That's not glamorous. And then that was just like, and then. At my next place, it was COVID, so we weren't traveling anywhere. And then here, I've actually probably traveled the most here, but not even for client stuff. And I'm enjoying it. I can't even lie.
Because it's not for client stuff.
but my latest travels were long. Like, I was delayed for like 4 hours, and I was just at the airport. And then it was like a 3-hour train journey from the airport to the town I'm in. So yeah, it's not always like, oh my gosh, like, it's amazing. Like, sometimes you have to travel over the weekend, and I think the part you touched on where, like, you have to sacrifice like your social life sometimes in terms of like friends, family, stuff like that, that's not ideal.
I remember when me and Tammy used to work together in like cyber risk, we'd be like, why can't a cyber attack happen in Bali? Oh, what are all these hackers doing? We're like, why are these such lame locations?
Yeah. We were like, we'll go do a recovery, a response exercise, like out in the Maldives or something, because it's the most unglamorous locations more often than not, to be honest. Okay. Final, I think, question. What are you most excited about when you think about your future as a pop star? Or, well, one is as a pop star, or the future of pop starring, and also, what are you most excited about when you think about technology?
So I think for me as a pop star, because for me this is still quite a novel thing, I think it's just doing what I currently do in all the different industries that I still yet haven't really done this sort of stuff in. And I think for technology, like, I am one of those people that are willing to pay for convenience. So if it's anything that makes my life easier, I will 100% be behind it. So things that I love that I would like to evolve, for example, it's all about the little things in life. I love, for example, my washing machine delay timer, because it means that I can set it on for when, like, I'm in bed, and by the time I wake up, the washing's done. Now, wouldn't it be even better if we had something that could then just hang it up for me?
Wow. Listen, I hate this doing laundry so much. If someone made a machine,
my sheets.
All I have to do is put the dirty clothes in, and then out comes folded, clean laundry. Mate, that would be amazing.
I think when we're reaching the point where these things can be done just by technology, that is when I will be living my best life. I mean, I'm sure we're still quite far off that. Not too far, but I know that everyone's crazy about Chat GPT currently.
And we've spoken about that in every episode since it's come out, and we're happy to keep talking about it.
I'm a bit torn about that, because like I was responsible for doing like our friendship group's agenda for Poland. I kind of enjoyed it, you know, doing all the research, narrowing down all the restaurants. I'm just, you know, it would be great if, you know, Chat GPT evolved and could basically, I mean, it can nearly already do that if you ask it. But then I'm like, oh, where's my value add again? God, it takes away from that. I think it's quite scary at some point as well. What I'm most excited for is like tech in the tangible world. Love all that stuff in the metaverse and all that, but I want tech to be able to help my daily life here in the real world. So yeah, still waiting for that laundry machine, aren't we, Temi? So until then.
I like it.
That's an interesting product idea. The wheels are turning in my head, so I'll let you know.
Did you just
please a product designer?
Yeah.
I think the next step in like home appliances is enabling us to be more lazy. So like I'm thinking dishwasher already exists, but wouldn't it be great if somehow those dishes could like end up in the cupboard?
Exactly.
Like, without my interference.
Exactly. There's like that step.
There's a step that we still have to intervene.
Things that I really like in terms of like recent innovation, I think I've probably told you about this, Temi. Like I have this 12-in-1 cooker.
Yeah.
And like, oh my days, it's great. And I just think that like if we can take that step further, you know, like it's already evolved so much that I have like an air fryer and a steamer and like a pressure cooker all in one or whatever. But now if we can just take that a bit further.
That's amazing.
What I'm thinking, and I may be about, I don't know if I should say it, actually, it's a potential like business idea. But yeah, that's it. That's it.
Lots of things to be excited about.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa.
Thanks for inviting me.
I've learned a lot of things today.
It's been really cool. Yeah. Really cool talking to a pop star. Who would have thought?
Pop star, yeah. No, that was really fun. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No worries. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of Let's Talk Tech. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you think about pop and all the things we discussed.
R&B.
What did you say, sorry?
I said R&B.
R&B, or hip-hop, or dance and electronica.
Like, no, whatever, don't do that, guys.
Whatever rocks your boat, let us know. But yeah, that was another episode of Let's Talk Tech Season 2, Day in the Life. I hope you enjoyed it.